With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
A Werewolf Romance, written by Lillian Gerard. The pregnancy test was positive. The money had cleared my account, enough to save my family from ruin. He needed a surrogate to break his pack's curse. I needed the money to survive. But when the pregnancy test showed positive, everything changed. "The contract is fulfilled," he growled, his eyes flashing wolf gold as he stared at the sonogram. And I felt that sound vibrate through my chest like thunder. "Now, the real claiming begins." I thought I was just carrying his heir as a contract. I never knew I was the missing Luna who would save his entire kingdom. I never believed in fate. Destiny was something people invented to make sense of chaos, to romanticize the random collisions that shaped our lives. I believed in choices, consequences, and the cold mathematics of survival. That's what brought me to the Moonstone Cafe on a Tuesday afternoon in late September, my hands shaking around a lukewarm cup of coffee I couldn't afford. The cafe smelled like cinnamon and desperation, though maybe that last part was just me. I'd chosen a corner booth, the worn leather cracked beneath my jeans, positioned so I could watch the door. I was early. Too early. But I couldn't sit still at home anymore, couldn't watch my mother's hands tremble as she sorted through medical bills we'd never be able to pay. Couldn't see the resignation in my father's eyes as he calculated how many months we had before we lost everything. Stage 4 cancer doesn't care about payment plans. It doesn't negotiate. And neither did the hospital. So I'd made a choice. A desperate, impossible choice that had led me here, waiting for a stranger who'd placed an ad that seemed too good to be true. Seeking surrogate. Generous compensation. Discretion essential. Must be willing to relocate temporarily. The compensation he'd listed could save my family, could give my mother the treatment she needed, the clinical trial that insurance refused to cover, could keep my father from working himself into an early grave, trying to pay bills that multiplied like malignant cells. All I had to do was carry a stranger's child for 9 months. I pulled out my phone for the 100th time, rereading the brief email exchange we'd had professional. Courteous, completely impersonal. He'd asked for a photo, basic health history, and confirmation that I understood the commitment involved. I'd sent everything, my finger hovering over the send button for 10 minutes before I'd finally pressed it, feeling like I was selling something far more precious than the use of my womb. His response had been immediate. "Tomorrow, 3 p.m., Moonstone Cafe. I'll know you when I see you." That last line had sent an odd shiver through me, though I couldn't explain why. How would he know me? I hadn't sent any distinguishing details beyond my photo. A simple headshot, nothing special. Brown hair that couldn't decide if it wanted to be wavy or straight. Green eyes that sometimes looked hazel in certain light. A face my ex-boyfriend had once called pretty enough, which had felt like the most lukewarm compliment in history. I was ordinary. Forgettable. The kind of person who blended into crowds and never stood out. Except for the weird things I tried not to think about, the fact that I'd always been stronger than I should be. Not superhuman, but enough that I'd learned to pretend to struggle with things I could actually lift easily. The way my senses sometimes sharpened without warning, letting me hear conversations rooms away, or smell things others couldn't detect. The dreams I'd had since childhood of running through forests on four legs, wind in my fur, the taste of moonlight on my tongue. Dreams. Just dreams. Probably some kind of coping mechanism from a childhood I couldn't remember before age 7, when I'd been found wandering alone on a highway with no memory of where I'd come from. The Mercers had adopted me, loved me, raised me as their own. That was enough. The rest didn't matter. The cafe door chimed, and I looked up instinctively. The air changed. That's the only way I can describe it. One moment, the cafe was full of the normal ambient noise of an afternoon crowd. The hiss of the espresso machine, the murmur of conversations, the clatter of cups and plates. The next, everything seemed muted, dimmed, as if someone had turned down the volume on the entire world. He stood in the doorway, and he was wrong. Not wrong, like dangerous or deformed. Wrong, like a lion in a library, a storm in a bottle. Something vast and wild compressed into a form too small to contain it. He was tall, well over 6 feet, with broad shoulders that strained against a perfectly tailored charcoal suit. Dark hair swept back from a face that could have been carved from marble, all sharp angles and strong lines. But it was his eyes that stopped my breath. Gold. Pure, molten gold. Not brown with gold flecks. Not hazel that caught the light strangely. Gold. Impossible, luminous gold that seemed to glow from within. He scanned the cafe with the focused intensity of a predator, and when his gaze locked on mine, I felt it like a physical impact. My coffee cup rattled in its saucer. My heart kicked against my ribs. And something deep in my chest, something I'd never acknowledged before, unfurled like wings I didn't know I had. He moved through the cafe with liquid grace, and people unconsciously moved aside for him, conversations faltering as he passed. By the time he reached my booth, I'd managed to remember how to breathe, though my hands were still shaking. Vera Mercer. His voice was deep, resonant, with an edge of gravel that sent shivers down my spine. Not a question, a statement. Yes. I was proud of how steady my voice sounded. You must be Damien. Damien Thornhart. He extended a hand, and I noticed his fingers were long, elegant, surprisingly calloused for a businessman. Thank you for meeting me. I took his hand, and the world tilted sideways. The touch was electric, literally. A jolt of something ran from his palm to mine, racing up my arm and exploding through my nervous system like lightning. I gasped, trying to pull back, but his grip tightened fractionally, holding me there for a heartbeat longer than necessary. His eyes widened almost imperceptibly, nostrils flaring as if he was smelling me. Then he released my hand and slid into the booth across from me with that same predatory grace. Are you all right? He asked, and I caught something strange in his voice. Not concern, exactly. More like fascination. Fine. I tucked my hands under the table, pressing my palms against my jeans. The spot where he'd touched me still tingled, just static electricity. Of course. But the way he said it suggested he didn't believe that any more than I did. For a long moment, he just looked at me, his gaze so intense I wanted to squirm. I forced myself to sit still, to meet his eyes, even though everything in me was screaming to look away, to submit to whatever authority radiated from him like heat submit. Where had that word come from? You're younger than I expected, he said finally. 24? 25 next month. I lifted my chin slightly. Your ad didn't specify an age requirement beyond legal adulthood. No, it didn't. A hint of something, amusement, approval, flickered across his face. And you understand what I'm asking? The full commitment? You want a surrogate to carry your child. 9 months full-term pregnancy, then I walk away. I kept my voice steady, businesslike, even though saying the words out loud made my stomach clench. The compensation you offered would change my life. My family's life. So yes, I understand the commitment. Your family. He leaned back, studying me with those unsettling eyes. The ad said discretion was essential. Would they know? My mother is dying. The words came out harsher than I intended. Stage 4 cancer. There's a clinical trial that could help her, but insurance won't cover it, and we can't afford it. My father is killing himself trying to work enough to keep up with the bills. So no, they wouldn't know the details. They'd just know that their daughter found a way to help them when they needed it most. Something shifted in his expression. A softening I hadn't expected. I'm sorry about your mother. Don't be. I wrapped my hands around my coffee cup, needing something to hold. Everyone's sorry. Sorry doesn't pay for treatment. Sorry doesn't buy time. But your offer could. He was quiet for a long moment, his gaze never leaving my face. I had the strangest sensation that he was seeing more than I was showing, reading things in me I didn't know were written. There are conditions, he said finally, beyond what was in the ad. I assumed there would be. You would need to relocate, not just temporarily, for the full duration of the pregnancy and a recovery period afterward, minimum 10 months, possibly 12. I'd expected that. Where? My estate. It's remote, secure. You would have your own quarters, complete privacy, but I need to ensure the pregnancy is protected. Protected. Interesting word choice. Not monitored or supervised. Protected. Why? I asked bluntly. Why does a surrogate pregnancy need that level of security? His jaw tightened almost imperceptibly. I have enemies, business rivals who would use any leverage against me. A pregnancy, my heir, would be leverage. Heir. Not child, not baby heir. What exactly do you do, Mr. Thornhart? Damien. And I run a family business. Extensive holdings, multiple territories. A lot of people depending on me. He leaned forward slightly, and I caught a scent that shouldn't have been possible. Pine and smoke and something wild, like the forest after rain. I need an heir to secure my position, to protect my people. This isn't about ego or legacy. It's about survival. The intensity in his voice made my breath catch. This wasn't just a wealthy man wanting to pass on his genes. This was something deeper, more desperate.
You've finally broken loose from work. 3 friends, 1 tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
You said you need to ensure the pregnancy is protected, I said slowly. What aren't you telling me? For a moment, I thought he wouldn't answer. Then he reached into his jacket and pulled out a slim folder, setting it on the table between us. The full contract. Read it carefully. There are clauses that will seem unusual. Dietary restrictions. Movement restrictions. Medical protocols that go beyond standard prenatal care. He pushed the folder toward me. If you agree to this, Vera, you're agreeing to trust me completely. To follow instructions that might not make sense. To accept that there are things I can't fully explain. At least, not yet. I stared at the folder, my heart pounding. Every rational part of my brain was screaming at me to walk away. This was too strange, too secretive, too much like the beginning of a horror story. But I thought about my mother's hands, trembling with more than just the cold. About my father's eyes, losing their light day by day. About the life I could give them. More time, a fighting chance, hope I opened the folder. The contract was extensive, 40 pages of dense legal text, but certain clauses jumped out immediately, highlighted in bold. The surrogate agrees to consume a diet specified by the employer, including but not limited to organic meats, rare preparation required, specific herbs and supplements, and restriction of processed foods. The surrogate agrees to remain within the boundaries of the employer's estate, except for approved medical appointments, always accompanied by designated security personnel. The surrogate agrees to submit to weekly blood testing and monthly comprehensive medical evaluations by the employer's personal physician. The surrogate acknowledges that certain medical protocols may be unconventional, but are essential for the health and viability of the pregnancy. "This is insane," I whispered, looking up at him. "Rare meat? Movement restrictions? What kind of medical protocols? The kind that will ensure a healthy pregnancy and birth?" His voice was calm, but his eyes were intense. "I told you, this requires complete trust. You're asking me to sign away my autonomy for a year. I'm asking you to carry the most important thing in my world." He leaned forward, and the air between us seemed to crackle. "I will protect you, Vera. You and the child. But I need you to follow the rules, even when they don't make sense. Especially when they don't make sense." I should have walked away. Should have told him to find someone else, someone more desperate or less cautious. But my eyes fell to the last page of the contract, to the compensation clause, $2 million. Half on confirmation of pregnancy, half on successful delivery. $2 million. Enough to save my mother. Enough to secure my family's future. Enough to justify 9 months of weird dietary restrictions and medical protocols. "If I agree," I said slowly, "I want one addition to the contract." His eyebrows rose slightly, which is, "If anything happens to me during this pregnancy, any complications, any danger, my family gets the full compensation regardless. They don't lose out because I couldn't complete the term." Something flickered in his eyes. Respect, maybe, or approval. "Done. I'll have my lawyer add that clause today." I looked down at the contract again, at the dotted line waiting for my signature. My hand moved to my purse, pulling out a pen my father had given me when I graduated college, "for the important decisions," he'd said. This was the most important decision of my life. I signed my name, Vera Elizabeth Mercer, in clear, firm strokes. When I looked up, Damien's eyes were glowing brighter, that impossible gold seeming to swirl with flecks of amber. He reached across the table, not for my hand, but hovering just above it, as if asking permission. I nodded, not sure why, and he took my hand again. This time, the jolt was softer, warmer, spreading through me like honey instead of lightning. "The contract begins now," he said quietly. "I'll arrange for the medical appointments. The procedure itself is standard IVF. My genetic material has already been prepared and stored. If successful, you'll move to the estate within a week. And if it's not successful, we try again, as many times as it takes." His thumb brushed across my knuckles, a gesture that seemed unconscious, almost tender. "But I don't think we'll need multiple attempts. How can you be so sure?" He smiled then, a slow curve of lips that transformed his face from severe to devastating. "Because you're perfect. I knew it the moment I saw you, the moment I scented—" He stopped abruptly, jaw clenching. "The moment I met you." "Scented?" He'd been about to say scented. But before I could question it, he released my hand and stood, pulling out his phone. "I'm transferring the first installment, now $20,000, to cover your immediate expenses and demonstrate my commitment. The rest comes when the pregnancy is confirmed. My phone buzzed in my pocket. I pulled it out with shaking hands and stared at the banking notification. $20,000. Just like that. Real. This was really happening. I'll have my assistant contact you tomorrow with the medical appointment details, Damien said, buttoning his suit jacket. Is there anything you need? Anything I can provide to make this transition easier? I thought about asking 1,000 questions, about demanding explanations for the bizarre contract clauses, for his strange word choices, for the way my entire body hummed with awareness whenever he was near. Instead, I just said, time. I need time to tell my family I'm taking a job opportunity out of state, to prepare them.
Of course.
He inclined his head slightly, a gesture that seemed oddly formal, almost courtly. Take the time you need. But Vera? He waited until I met his eyes. Don't research me. Don't try to dig into my background or my business. For your own safety, trust what I'm telling you directly. Can you do that? It should have been a red flag. Should have sent me running. But the way he said it wasn't threatening. It was pleading, as if he was protecting me from something, not just himself. Yes, I heard myself say. I can do that. He nodded once, then turned and walked away. I watched him leave, watched how people unconsciously moved aside for him again, watched him disappear into the September afternoon like smoke. Only when he was gone did I realize my hands had stopped shaking, that the constant anxiety that had been my companion for months had quieted to a distant whisper, that something in me, that strange, wild something I'd always tried to ignore, was awake and humming with anticipation. I looked down at my phone, at the banking notification that proved this wasn't a dream I'd just agreed to carry a stranger's child. A stranger with golden eyes and a touch like lightning. A stranger who'd almost said he scented me. I should have been terrified. Instead, I was excited. And that scared me more than anything else. The fertility clinic was nothing like I'd imagined. I'd expected sterile white walls and that chemical hospital smell, but Damien's personal physician operated out of what looked like a luxury spa. The building was tucked into the woods at the edge of the city, all glass and natural wood, surrounded by pine trees that made the air smell clean and wild. Dr. Miranda Chen met me in a reception area that featured a living wall of plants and a water feature that burbled soothingly. She was a tiny woman, barely 5 feet tall, with sharp eyes and an efficiency of movement that suggested coiled energy. Miss Mercer. She extended a hand, her grip surprisingly strong. Damien has told me a great deal about you. All good things, I hope. I tried for a light tone, but my nerves made it fall flat. Interesting things. Her smile was enigmatic. Come, let's get you checked in, and I'll explain the process. The examination room was more comfortable than clinical. Soft lighting, warm colors, a padded table that looked more like a massage bed than medical equipment. But it was the smell that caught my attention. Something herbal, almost earthy, with an undertone of something I couldn't quite place. Is that sage? I asked as Dr. Chen prepared her instruments. Among other things, I believe in holistic medicine combined with cutting-edge science. She gestured for me to sit. Before we proceed with the fertility workup, I need to do some baseline tests. Standard blood work, hormone levels, general health screening. Damien's contract mentioned weekly blood tests. Why so frequent? Dr. Chen paused, her hands stilling on the syringe she was preparing. The pregnancy we're attempting to achieve is delicate. We'll need to monitor very carefully to ensure everything progresses normally. There was that word again, normal. Why did everyone keep emphasizing it? The blood draw was quick and efficient. Dr. Chen filled 3 vials, labeling each with careful precision. As she held the last one up to the light, Her eyes widened almost imperceptibly. "Is something wrong?" I asked. "No," but she was staring at my blood with an intensity that contradicted her words. "Just, your cellular activity is remarkable. Very healthy." She set the vials aside and continued with the examination. Physical assessment.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Ultrasound of my reproductive system. Endless questions about my medical history. When she asked about my family background, I had to give her the abbreviated version. I'm adopted. Found abandoned when I was 7. No records before that. My adoptive parents have clean medical histories, but I can't speak to my biological background. Dr. Chen's pen stopped moving across her clipboard. No memories at all from before age 7? Nothing concrete. Just dreams, feelings. I shifted uncomfortably. Why does that matter? It doesn't. But she made a note on her chart with more force than necessary. Everything looks excellent, Vera. You're in perfect health for carrying a pregnancy. I'm going to start you on some prenatal vitamins, custom blend. Very important that you take them exactly as prescribed. She handed me a bottle that looked handmade, the label written in elegant script. When I opened it, the pills inside were a deep green-brown, and they smelled like forest floor and something metallic. These look homemade. Specially formulated. Damien is very particular about the health of his potential heir. She met my eyes steadily. Trust the process, Vera. I've been his physician for many years. I know what I'm doing. The IVF procedure was scheduled for 3 days later. In the interim, I moved through my life in a daze, taking the strange vitamins that made my senses sharpen and my energy surge, preparing my family for my extended work contract without revealing the truth. My mother cried when I gave her the check for her clinical trial. My father held me for 5 minutes straight, his shoulders shaking. They didn't ask too many questions, too relieved and grateful to probe the sudden windfall. I told myself I was doing the right thing. That 9 months of my life was a small price to pay for their survival. But late at night, I'd wake with my heart racing, dreaming of golden eyes and a voice that called to something wild in my blood. The implantation procedure was quick, almost anticlimactic. Dr. Chen's steady hands and soothing voice talked me through each step. Damien wasn't there. He'd told me he'd make himself scarce during the clinical aspects, which I appreciated. This was strange enough without him watching. But afterward, as I lay on the recovery bed, waiting for the recommended rest period to pass, I heard raised voices in the hall outside. Completely unprecedented. Her cellular structure? That was Dr. Chen. I know what she is. Damien's voice, lower, dangerous. The question is why she doesn't know. Suppressed heritage? Blocked bloodline? I've seen it before in the Lost Ones, but never this complete. She has no awareness at all. That changes nothing about what I need from her. Damien, Dr. Chen's voice turned sharp. If she's a lost one from a notable line, the implications are irrelevant to this contract. She carries my heir. That's all that matters. Silence. Then, is that all that matters? Because your scent tells me differently. Careful, Miranda. I've known you since you were a pup. Don't think you can fool me with that alpha tone. She's not just your surrogate, is she? More silence. Then, so quiet, I almost missed it. I don't know yet. Maybe. But she doesn't need to know that. Not until the air is secure. I close my eyes, my heart pounding. What were they talking about? Lost ones? Alpha tone? Bloodlines? And why did some part of me, that wild secret part, understand perfectly, even as my conscious mind rejected it all as impossible? 2 weeks later, Dr. Chen confirmed what my body had already been screaming at me: I was pregnant. Damien's estate wasn't an estate. It was a kingdom. The car that picked me up was a sleek black SUV with windows tinted so dark I couldn't see out, driven by a silent man who introduced himself only as Marcus and had the same predatory grace as Damien. We drove for 3 hours, leaving the city behind, climbing into mountains I hadn't even known existed in this region. The road turned from paved to gravel, winding through forests so thick the canopy blocked out most of the afternoon sun, and then around a curve that made my stomach drop, the trees opened up. The house, if you could call it that, sprawled across a valley like something out of a fantasy novel. Stone and timber construction that looked both ancient and perfectly maintained, with soaring windows that caught the dying sunlight and threw it back in amber flames. It was surrounded by wilderness, mountains rising on three sides, a river cutting through the property with water so clear I could see the stones at the bottom from half a mile away. "Welcome to Thornheart territory," Marcus said, his voice a deep rumble. "The Alpha is waiting for you." Alpha. There was that word again. The inside of the house was even more breathtaking. Vaulted ceilings with exposed beams, fireplaces large enough to walk into, furniture that managed to be both rustic and elegant. But it was the people that stopped me cold. There were dozens of them, moving through the space with purpose and barely contained energy. Men and women of all ages, all with that same predatory grace, all turning to look at me as I entered with an intensity that made my skin prickle, and their eyes. Some had normal colors, but others. Others had eyes that caught the light strangely. Gold. Amber. One woman had eyes the silver gray of storm clouds, Vera. Damien appeared from a side hallway, and the crowd parted for him instantly, heads bowing slightly as he passed. He was dressed casually in jeans and a dark sweater, but he wore them like a king wore royal robes. "You made it. Your directions were very clear." I tried to keep my voice steady, aware of all those eyes on me. "This is not what I expected." "No, I imagine not." He moved to my side, close enough that I could feel the heat radiating from him. His hand came to rest lightly on my lower back, a possessive gesture that should have annoyed me, but instead sent warmth flooding through my system. "These are my people, my pack." "Pack." The word hung in the air like a confession. "Everyone," Damien's voice carried through the space without him having to raise it. "This is Vara Mercer. She's under my protection. Anyone who causes her distress will answer directly to me. Is that understood?" A chorus of acknowledgement rippled through the crowd, voices blending in a way that sounded almost like a howl. "Come," Damien said quietly, his hand pressing gently against my back. "I'll show you to your quarters. You must be exhausted from the journey." He led me through the house, down hallways decorated with tapestries and artwork that all seemed to feature wolves in various poses, running, hunting, howling at moons both full and crescent. My fingers itched to touch the woven fur, so realistic I could almost feel it. "Here." He opened a door to reveal a suite that was larger than my entire apartment. A four-poster bed dominated the space, piled with pillows and covered in what looks like furs. A sitting area with a fireplace already crackling with warmth. Windows that overlooked the valley. The view so stunning it stole my breath. "This is incredible," I whispered. "I'm glad you approve." He moved to the windows, his profile sharp against the dying light. "Your needs here are simple. Eat what's provided. Take your vitamins. Rest as much as you need. And stay within the territory boundaries. The contract mentioned that. Why? He was quiet for a long moment, his jaw working as if he was choosing his words carefully. There are threats. Other groups who would harm you to hurt me. The territory is protected. You're safe here. But beyond the boundary markers, I can't guarantee your safety. I moved to stand beside him, looking out at the wilderness. What is this place, Damien? Really? Home, he said simply. For my people. For generations of my bloodline. And now, for a little while, home for you. Something in his voice made me look up at him. His profile was sharp, beautiful in a harsh way, and his eyes, those impossible golden eyes, were fixed on the horizon with an expression I couldn't read. The baby? I said quietly, my hand moving instinctively to my still flat stomach. You said you needed an heir to secure your position. What does that mean? It means, he said slowly, that my people are at a crossroads. Without an heir, leadership passes to another line. A line that would lead through violence and oppression rather than protection and honor. This child, our child, is the difference between peace and war. Our child. The word sent a shiver through me that had nothing to do with temperature. That's a lot of pressure, I managed. It is. He turned to me then, and the intensity in his gaze made my breath catch. Which is why I need you to trust me, Vera. Even when things seem strange. Even when you're frightened. Trust that I'm doing everything to protect you, and this pregnancy. I should have questioned him more, should have demanded explanations for the cryptic comments, the strange people with their predator eyes, the way everyone had called him Alpha. But standing there in the golden light of sunset, his hand still warm against my back, all I could do was nod. I'll trust you, I whispered. His eyes flashed brighter for just a moment, and he leaned down, his lips brushing against my forehead, in a gesture so tender it made my heart ache. Good, he murmured against my skin. Because the next few months are going to challenge everything you think you know about the world. About yourself, but I'll be here. I promise you that. He pulled back, his hand sliding away from me, and I felt the loss of his touch like a physical pain. Dinner is at 7. Someone will come get you. He moved toward the door, then paused. Vera, thank you for this. For everything. Then he was gone, the door closing softly behind him, leaving me alone in a room that smelled like pine and smoke and something wild I was beginning to recognize as uniquely him. I moved to the bed, sinking down onto furs that were impossibly soft, and pressed my hand against my stomach. Inside me, a life was beginning. A life that was half mine, half his, and entirely caught up in stakes I didn't fully understand. I'd thought this would be simple. A business transaction. 9 months and done. But as I sat there in the fading light, surrounded by the scent of him and the strange, wild energy of this place, I knew with certainty that nothing about this was going to be simple. And somewhere deep inside me, in that secret place that had always been other, something stretched and yawned and began to wake. The first few weeks at Thornheart Territory passed in a strange blur of routine and revelation. Every morning I woke to breakfast already prepared, always meat, rare to the point of being barely cooked, alongside fresh vegetables and herbs I couldn't name. The first time I'd seen the bloody steak on my plate, my stomach had turned. But when I'd forced myself to take a bite, something in me had sung with satisfaction. My body craved it in a way that felt instinctive, primal. I told myself it was pregnancy cravings. but pregnancy cravings didn't usually start this early, and they didn't usually feel like remembering something you'd forgotten. The people here, Damien's pack, kept their distance but watched me constantly. I felt their eyes on me whenever I moved through the house, a weight of attention that should have been uncomfortable but somehow felt protective, like I was something precious they'd been tasked with guarding. Marcus, who I learned was Damien's beta, second in command, he'd explained when I'd asked, became my shadow. Anytime I wanted to walk the grounds, he was there. Silent, vigilant, and utterly unmovable when I tried to push past the boundary markers he'd shown me, the Alpha's orders, was all he'd say. His voice respectful, but firm. You stay within the territory. I'd tested those boundaries once, driven by a stubbornness I couldn't quite explain. I'd walked to the edge where the forest thickened, where carved stones marked the line between safety and whatever lay beyond. The moment my foot crossed that invisible line, everything had changed. The air had grown heavy, oppressive. My skin had prickled with warning, and beneath my feet, the earth itself had seemed to pulse with wrongness, with the scent of something that made every instinct I had scream danger. I'd stumbled backward, my heart racing, and Marcus had been there instantly, his hand on my elbow, steadying me. "You feel it," he'd said quietly. "Not a question. The rival pack's scent markers. They patrol the borders, looking for weakness." "I don't understand," my voice had been shaking. "How can I feel that? How can I smell the difference between your... between this land and theirs?" Marcus had studied me for a long moment, his amber eyes thoughtful. "Perhaps you should ask the Alpha that question." But I didn't ask Damien, because asking would mean admitting that something was happening to me. Something that defied explanation. My senses were getting sharper by the day. I could hear conversations from 3 rooms away, could smell when someone was approaching before I saw them, could feel the subtle shifts in the air when the weather was about to change. And the dreams. God, the dreams. Every night I ran through forests on 4 legs, my paws hitting earth with perfect rhythm. I hunted with a pack I couldn't see but could feel, their presence a comfort against my flanks. I lifted my muzzle to a full moon and howled with a voice that wasn't human, and it felt like coming home. I woke from these dreams gasping, my body aching with a longing I couldn't name, and my hands would move to my stomach where the smallest bump was just beginning to show. The baby was growing fast. Too fast, Dr. Chen had noted during my weekly checkup, though she'd tried to hide her concern. "Accelerated development," she'd murmured, studying the ultrasound with a frown. "But everything looks healthy. Strong heartbeat. Good positioning." "Is it normal?" I'd asked. "For it to be growing this quickly?" "Normal is relative," she'd said, which wasn't an answer at all. Damien and I had fallen into a strange dance of proximity and distance. He checked on me multiple times a day, always finding excuses, bringing me books, asking about my comfort, ensuring I had everything I needed. But he never stayed long, never touched me beyond the occasional brush of fingers or steadying hand. And he never explained the things I needed explained until the night I found him in the library at 2 in the morning, staring into a roaring fire with eyes that glowed in the darkness. I'd been unable to sleep, my body restless with energy that had nowhere to go. I'd wandered the house in the oversized t-shirt I slept in, following instincts I didn't question, and found myself drawn to the library by a pull I couldn't resist. He was sitting in a leather chair, a glass of amber liquid in his hand, still dressed in the jeans and sweater he'd worn at dinner. But his posture was different, less controlled, more raw. His hair was mussed, as if he'd been running his hands through it, and there was a tension in his shoulders that spoke of barely leashed power. "Can't sleep?" His voice was rough, and he didn't turn to look at me. "How did you know I was here?" I moved into the room, drawn to the fire's warmth. I didn't make any noise. I always know where you are. Now he did turn, and his eyes caught the firelight, burning gold and primal. I can feel you, your heartbeat, your scent, every breath you take. The confession hung between us, too intimate, too raw. That's not normal, I whispered. No, it's not. He set down his glass and stood, moving toward me with that predatory grace. Nothing about this is normal, Vera. Not for you, not for me, not for that child you're carrying. Then tell me. I stood my ground as he approached, even though everything in me wanted to either run or move closer. Tell me what's happening to me. Why I can hear things I shouldn't hear, smell things I shouldn't smell. Why I dream of running on four legs and it feels more real than being awake. He stopped inches from me, so close I could feel the heat radiating from his body, could smell pine and smoke and something uniquely him that made my mouth water. You want the truth? His voice was low, dangerous. The truth is that you're not entirely human, Vera. You never were. You're a wolf shifter from a bloodline that was scattered, hidden, nearly destroyed 18 years ago. You're what we call a lost one, someone with wolf blood, who was separated from their pack too young to remember, too young to shift, raised among humans with no knowledge of their heritage. The words should have sounded insane, should have made me laugh or run or call for help. Instead, they felt like the missing piece of a puzzle I'd been trying to solve my entire life. That's impossible, I said, but my voice lacked conviction. Is it? He reached out slowly, giving me time to pull away, and cupped my face in his hands. His touch sent electricity racing through me, and I gasped. Is it impossible that you can hear my heartbeat right now? Can smell the whiskey on my breath from 3 feet away? Is it impossible that you knew I was in this room before you saw me? That you followed a pull you can't explain? My hands came up to grip his wrists, not to push him away, but to anchor myself. If what you're saying is true, why don't I remember? Why can't I shift? Because you were too young when you were separated from your pack. Shifting requires training, guidance, a connection to your wolf that you never developed, and memory. His thumb brushed across my cheekbone, a gesture so tender it made my chest ache. Memory can be suppressed by trauma, by the shock of losing everything you knew. But the pregnancy... I could barely get the words out. You said the baby was developing quickly. You said, the baby is shifter, he confirmed quietly. My heir. And your dormant wolf blood is responding to the pregnancy, trying to wake up to protect the pup. That's why your senses are sharpening, why you're getting stronger, why you feel the territory boundaries and can sense pack dynamics. Your wolf is emerging. I should have pushed him away, should have called him crazy, and demanded to leave. But instead, I leaned into his touch and whispered, "Show me." His eyes flared brighter, pupils dilating. "Vera, show me, please. I need to see." For a long moment, he just looked at me, his jaw working as if he was fighting some internal battle. Then he stepped back, his hands falling away from my face, and began to undress. I should have looked away, should have given him privacy, but I couldn't move, couldn't breathe, as he pulled off his sweater, revealing a torso of lean muscle and golden skin. As he kicked off his boots and pushed down his jeans until he stood before me in nothing but his humanity. "Don't be afraid," he said softly. Then he changed. It wasn't like the movies. No slow, painful cracking of bones or horror movie transformation. One moment he was a man, and the next, the air shimmered like heat waves, and a massive wolf stood where Damien had been. He was huge, easily the size of a small horse, with fur the color of smoke and shadow, and those same golden eyes that had haunted my dreams. Power radiated from him in waves that made the air thick, made my skin prickle with awareness, and some part of me, that wild, secret part, recognized him. Alpha, something in me whispered. Mate. The wolf moved forward, closing the distance between us, and pressed his massive head against my stomach where our child grew. The touch was gentle, reverent, and I felt a vibration that might have been a purr or a growl of satisfaction. My hands moved of their own accord, sinking into his fur, and it was softer than I'd imagined, warm and alive and right. Tears streamed down my face, though I couldn't have said if they were from fear or wonder or recognition. "You're beautiful," I whispered. The wolf pulled back and the air shimmered again. Damien stood before me, human once more, close enough that I could feel every breath he took. "You're not afraid," he said, his voice rough with emotion. "No," I reached up, my hand cupping his face the way he'd cupped mine. "I'm not afraid, I'm awake." Something broke in his expression, all that careful control shattering. He pulled me against him, his arms wrapping around me with a possessiveness that should have frightened me, but instead felt like safety. "You're not just a surrogate," he said into my hair, his voice ragged. "You were never just a surrogate. From the moment I caught your scent, I knew you're my fated mate, Vera. The one the moon chose for me. The Luna my pack needs." Fated mate. The words resonated through me like a bell, waking echoes I didn't know existed. "But the contract!" "Fuck the contract." He pulled back enough to look at me, and his eyes were blazing. "I thought I needed an heir to save my pack. I didn't know the moon would send me both an heir and the one person who could complete me, who could wake your own heritage and become the Luna my people have been waiting for. I don't know how to be that," I whispered. "I don't know how to be anything but human." "Then I'll teach you." His forehead pressed against mine, and I felt his heartbeat synchronizing with my own. "If you'll let me. If you'll stay. Not because of the contract, but because this is where you belong. Where you've always belonged." I thought about the dreams, about the pull I'd felt since arriving here, about how every cell in my body sang when he was near. I thought about the child growing inside me, half him, half me, wholly miraculous. And I thought about the life I'd left behind, the family I'd saved with his money, the ordinary existence that had never quite fit. "I don't understand all of this," I said slowly, "but I know. I know I feel more real here than I've ever felt anywhere else. More myself." "Then stay." His hands cradled my face again, and he looked at me like I was the answer to every question he'd ever asked. "Stay, and let me show you who you really are. Let me help you find your wolf. Let me..." His voice dropped lower, more vulnerable. "Let me earn the right to call you mine. You hired me to carry your child," I said, but there was no heat in it, just wonder, and somehow that turned into this. "The moon has a sense of humor," he agreed, and then he smiled. A real smile that transformed his entire face from severe to devastating. Or maybe she just knew that I'm too stubborn to accept a mate anyway but the hardest way possible. I laughed, surprising myself, and his smile widened. "There she is," he murmured. "My fierce Luna, hidden under all that fear and human conditioning, but there, waiting to emerge. What if I can't shift?" The fear slipped out before I could stop it. "What if I'm too broken, too damaged from being separated so young? Then you'll still be my mate, my Luna, the mother of my heir." His thumbs brushed away tears I hadn't realized were falling. "Shifting isn't what makes you worthy of this pack, Vera. Your heart does. Your strength. Your willingness to sacrifice everything for the people you love. That's what makes you a true Luna. I kissed him then, rising on my toes to press my lips to his, claiming him the way he'd been claiming me since the moment we met. He made a sound low in his throat, surprise melting into hunger, and his arms tightened around me, careful of my stomach but possessive everywhere else. The kiss was electric, setting every nerve ending on fire. I tasted whiskey and desire, and something wild that called to the wildness waking in me. His hands tangled in my hair, angling my head to deepen the kiss, and I opened for him, letting him in, letting myself fall into this impossible, terrifying, perfect thing between us. When we finally broke apart, both breathing hard, his eyes were glowing so brightly they cast shadows. "The contract ends now," he said, his voice rough. "Tomorrow I'll have my lawyers void it. You're not my employee anymore, Vera. You're my mate. And if you'll have me, I want to start courting you properly, the way you deserve." "Courting?" I couldn't help but smile. "That's very old-fashioned." "I'm a very old-fashioned wolf." His hand moved to rest on my stomach, over our child. "And you're carrying the future of my pack. That deserves respect, patience, time for you to adjust to everything you're learning." "What if I don't want patience?" The words came out bold, brave, and his eyes flared with heat. "Then we'll take this as fast or slow as you need." He pressed a kiss to my forehead, tender despite the hunger in his eyes. "But tonight, you need sleep. The baby is taking a lot of your energy, and your body is trying to wake your wolf. You're going through changes that would exhaust anyone." He was right. I could feel the exhaustion creeping in now that the adrenaline was fading. But I didn't want to leave him. Didn't want to go back to my room alone. As if reading my mind, he scooped me up in his arms, cradling me against his chest. "Then sleep here. With me. I'll hold you and keep you safe." He carried me to a room I hadn't seen before. His room, clearly, decorated in dark woods and fir throws, dominated by a bed that looked like it could sleep five. He laid me down gently, then climbed in beside me, pulling me against his chest. I curled into him, my hand resting over his heart, and felt something in me settle. This was right. This was where I belonged. "Tell me about my bloodline," I murmured, already half asleep. "You said I was from a scattered pack. What happened to them?" His arms tightened around me. "Tomorrow. I'll tell you everything tomorrow. Tonight, just rest." But I felt the tension in his body, heard the carefully controlled note in his voice, and knew that whatever had happened to my birth pack, it was bad. Still, wrapped in his warmth, surrounded by his scent, I let myself drift. My last conscious thought, a wondering realization. For the first time in my life, I felt like I was home. The next 3 months passed in a blur of discovery and transformation. Damien kept his promise. He courted me with an old-fashioned intensity that would have seemed absurd in anyone else, but felt perfect from him. Long walks through the territory where he taught me to recognize scent markers and pack boundaries. Quiet evenings in the library, where he read to me from books about wolf history and pack dynamics. Meals shared in comfortable silence or easy conversation, his hand always finding mine across the table. And through it all, he was patient tender, giving me space to adjust while making it clear with every look, every touch, every protective gesture that he was irrevocably, completely mine. My body continued changing. The pregnancy progressed faster than human normal. Dr. Chen estimated I was at 16 weeks development when I should have been at 12. My belly rounded noticeably, and with it came a strength I'd never known. I could lift things that should have been impossible, could run for miles without getting winded, could feel the baby moving inside me with a clarity that went beyond normal pregnancy awareness. But the most dramatic change was in my senses and instincts, Marcus began training me in what he called pack awareness, teaching me to feel the emotional undercurrents of the wolves around me, to sense hierarchies and relationships without words. I discovered I had a natural gift for it, an intuition that surprised even Damien. "You're going to be an incredible Luna," he'd told me one evening, pride warm in his voice. "You feel the pack's needs before they voice them. That's rare. Special." And slowly, carefully, I began to meet those needs. When a young wolf was struggling with his first shift, I'd found myself drawn to him, offering a calm presence that helped him succeed. When tensions flared between pack members, I mediated without thinking. Guided by instincts I was only beginning to understand, the pack's initial wariness of me melted into acceptance, then affection, then something that felt like love. They called me Luna now, and when they said it, their eyes held a respect that made my chest tight with emotion. But we still hadn't talked about my bloodline. Every time I brought it up, Damien would tense, his jaw working, and change the subject. Until finally, I cornered him. "Tell me," I demanded one night after dinner. "You promised you'd tell me everything. About my birth pack. About what happened to them." He'd looked at me for a long moment, then nodded slowly. "Come with me." He led me to a room I'd never entered. His office, lined with books and files, dominated by a massive desk. He pulled out a leather-bound journal and opened it to a page marked with a red ribbon. 18 years ago, there was a pack called Silvermane," he began quietly. "They controlled territory in the northern mountains. Powerful, respected. Led by an alpha named Marcus. Yes, my beta is named after him. In honor. They had a daughter, born under a blood moon. A daughter prophesied to be one of the most powerful Lunas of her generation." My heart began to pound. "What happened to them?" "They were betrayed." His voice went hard. "By a rival pack who wanted their territory. The attack came at night, coordinated and brutal. Most of the pack was slaughtered. The Alpha and Luna died defending their daughter, who was 7 years old. In the chaos, she was separated, lost. We searched for years, but there was no trace of her. We thought she'd been killed like the others. But she wasn't." My voice came out as a whisper. "She was found on a highway, with no memories, adopted by humans." "That's our theory, yes." He looked at me with eyes full of old pain and new wonder. "The daughter's name was Vera. Vera Silvermane." The name hit me like a physical blow. Silvermane. My name. My real name. And suddenly, fragments of memory began to surface. A woman with silver blonde hair singing a lullaby. A man with kind eyes teaching me to track by scent. The feeling of fur against my skin as I curled up with my pack to sleep. "Why didn't you tell me this from the beginning?" I asked, tears streaming down my face. "When you met me at that cafe, did you know?" "No." He moved to me, his hands cupping my face, thumbs brushing away my tears. "I knew you had power, knew you were wolf even if you didn't. But I didn't know which bloodline. Not until Dr. Chen analyzed your DNA and found markers that matched the Silvermane archives." He pressed his forehead to mine, "and by then I was already falling in love with you. I didn't want you to feel like I'd chosen you because of your bloodline. I wanted you to know I chose you for you. My family." The words choked out. "My real family? They're all dead?" "Most of them, yes." His arms wrapped around me, holding me as I grieved for people I couldn't remember, but somehow still mourned, but not all. "There are Silvermane wolves scattered across the country. Lost ones like you, separated and hidden for their own protection. When word spreads that the Silvermane princess has been found, that you're carrying the heir of the Thornheart line, He pulled back to look at me seriously. It's going to change things, Vera. It's going to make you even more of a target. For who? The pack that destroyed yours. They're still out there, still hungry for power, and they're led by... A howl split the night air, close enough to rattle the windows. Then another, and another, a discordant chorus that made every hair on my body stand up. Damien's entire body went rigid, his eyes flashing wolf gold. Get behind me, now! What's happening? They're here. The rival pack. They've crossed into our territory. He was already moving, pulling out his phone, barking orders. Marcus, full defensive positions. Get the pups to the safe room. No one engages until I give the order. He looked at me, his face grave. Vera, I need you to go to the safe room with the others. No. The word came out stronger than I'd intended. I'm not hiding. This is my pack now, my territory. You're pregnant. With your heir. With the future Alpha. Which means I have every reason to fight for this pack's survival. I moved to stand beside him, and something in my stance, something primal in Luna, made him pause. I may not be able to shift yet, but I can still protect my people. Pride and fear warred in his expression. Then he nodded sharply. Stay close to me. And if I tell you to run, you run. Understood. Understood. We moved through the house together, and I felt the pack converging, felt their fear and their readiness to fight. When we reached the main hall, it was full of wolves, some in human form, some already shifted, all looking to Damien for leadership. He stood at the center, power radiating from him in waves that made the air hum. They've declared war by crossing our borders. We defend our territory, our people, our future. His eyes found mine across the room. We defend our Luna. And as one, the entire pack turned to me and bowed their heads in acknowledgement. Before I could respond, the front doors burst open. They poured through the doors like a nightmare made flesh. Wolves in both forms, their eyes glowing with bloodlust, their snarls filling the air with promises of violence. At their head was a man I'd never seen but somehow recognized from Damien's tension. He was massive, nearly as tall as Damien, but broader, with hair the color of rust and eyes like dried blood. He wore the confidence of someone who'd never lost a fight, and the cruelty of someone who enjoyed winning too much. Thornheart. His voice was a rumble of contempt. Hiding behind your walls like always. Too weak to meet us in open combat. You violated sacred law by crossing my borders, Silas. Damien's voice was calm, but I felt the rage vibrating through him. This is an act of war. War? Silas laughed, and his pack echoed him with yips and snarls. This is justice. You don't deserve to lead. You're weak, producing an heir through contracts and human women because no true she-wolf would have you. His eyes found me, and the disgust in them was palpable. That's your great Luna. A pregnant human playing dress-up? The insult should have hurt. Instead, it ignited something in me. Something that had been building for months, waiting for this exact moment. I am Luna of this pack, I heard myself say, my voice carrying with an authority I didn't know I possessed. And you will address me with respect, or you will leave. Those are your only options. Silas's eyes widened slightly, surprised, then he threw back his head and laughed. She has spirit, I'll give you that. But spirit doesn't make you wolf, little human. Spirit doesn't give you the right to stand with the packs. No, I agreed, taking a step forward despite Damien's warning growl. But blood does. Silvermane blood. The blood of the pack your father slaughtered 18 years ago, because he was too cowardly to challenge them honorably. The laughter died. Silas's face went cold. Dangerous. What did you say? You heard me. The memories were coming faster now, clearer. I could see them. My parents, my pack. The night of fire and blood. Your father Victor attacked the Silvermane pack at night, killed women and children, broke every law of pack conduct. And you're just like him, a coward who hides behind numbers, because you know you could never win a fair fight. Vera. Damien's voice was tight with warning, but I couldn't stop. Something was building in me, a pressure that needed release. The Silvermane pack was destroyed, Silas said slowly, his eyes narrowing. Their bloodline ended. Not all of it. I felt heat building under my skin, felt something stretching inside me that had been dormant for 18 years. I survived. I remembered. And I'm done hiding what I am. The change happened before I could think about it, before I could fear it. One moment I was standing on two legs, human and vulnerable. The next, the world exploded into sensation. Smells so rich they were almost visible. Sounds layered and complex. The feel of fur against my skin and four paws hitting the ground with perfect balance. I was Wolf. Not as large as Damien, but sleek and strong. My fur the silver white of moonlight with streaks of darker gray. And I could feel everything. The pack's shock, Damien's fierce pride, Silas's sudden uncertainty. Silvermane, someone whispered, and the word rippled through both packs like thunder. I lifted my muzzle and howled. A sound that came from somewhere deep and ancient. A sound that spoke of bloodlines and birthright, and a Luna coming into her power. The Thornheart pack answered me, their voices joining mine in a harmony that made the very walls shake. Silas shifted then, his wolf massive and scarred, rust-colored fur bristling with aggression. He snarled at me, showing teeth designed to tear and kill. But I wasn't afraid. Damien moved to stand beside me, his massive form a shadow to my moonlight, and together we faced the enemy pack. Not just as Alpha and Luna, but as mates. As partners. As the beginning of something new. You want war? Damien's voice echoed in my mind. Pack bond, I realized with wonder. The telepathic connection all mated pairs shared. Then you'll face us both. Silas lunged, and the world became chaos. The battle was brutal, primal, everything refined away until only instinct remained. I'd never fought before, at least not in this form, but my body knew what to do. The Silvermane blood in me remembered 18 years of stolen training, and it guided my movements with deadly precision. I wasn't alone. Damien was always there, at my flank or ahead of me, protecting me even as I protected him. And the pack moved around us like a living organism, each wolf knowing their role, trusting their neighbors to guard their backs. But it was the baby that changed everything. In the middle of the chaos, I felt a surge of power from my womb, not pain, but strength. The heir, even unborn, was protecting me, lending me his alpha power in a way that should have been impossible. My movements became faster, stronger, my teeth and claws finding their marks with brutal efficiency. Silas realized his mistake too late. He'd thought he was facing a weak alpha and a pregnant human. Instead, he was facing the Thornheart Alpha, the Silvermane Luna, and the next generation's power combined. When Damien's jaws closed around Silas's throat, the rival Alpha went still, recognizing defeat. Damien held him there, one bite away from death, and I felt the question through our bond. Kill him or show mercy? I moved closer, letting Silas see my eyes, Luna eyes, glowing with silver light. Mercy, I sent back, but with conditions. Damien released him, and Silas shifted back to human form. blood running from the wounds on his neck and shoulders. His pack had fallen back, their own alpha subdued, and they watched with wary eyes. "You lost," I said, my voice coming out in human words, even though I was still Wolf, a Luna gift, the ability to speak in any form. "By pack law, your life is forfeit. But I'm offering you a choice. Leave these territories. Never return. Spread word that the Thornheart and Silvermane bloodlines are united, and anyone who threatens this pack threatens both legacies." I moved closer, letting him feel the power radiating from me. "Or refuse and die here. Right now. Those are your only options." Silas looked between me and Damien, seeing the united front we presented, and something broke in his expression. "I accept exile," he said hoarsely. "We'll leave. Tonight. Good." Damien's voice was cold. "You have until dawn to be beyond our borders. If I catch your scent on my territory after sunrise, I won't be as merciful as my mate." Silas and his pack slunk away, defeated and broken, and as the doors closed behind them, the Thornheart pack erupted in triumphant howls. They swarmed around us, rubbing against us in celebration, yipping and barking their joy. I shifted back to human form without thinking about it, as natural as breathing now that the door had been opened, and immediately felt Damien's arms around me, lifting me, his face buried in my neck. "You magnificent, terrifying, perfect woman," he murmured against my skin. "You shifted. You fought. You led them like you were born to it. I was born to it." I pulled back to look at him, seeing my own wonder reflected in his eyes. I just needed to remember. He kissed me then, deep and claiming, not caring that we had an audience, and the pack howled their approval. When we finally broke apart, both breathing hard, he pressed his forehead to mine. "Mate bond," he whispered. "I can feel you in my mind, in my heart. You're not just carrying my heir. You're my fated mate in truth now. Fully awakened. Fully mine." "And you're fully mine," I agreed, feeling the bond between us like a golden thread, unbreakable and eternal. Dr. Chen appeared then, pushing through the crowd with her medical bag. "Both of you, to the medical wing. Now. Luna, you just had your first shift while pregnant. I need to check you and the baby immediately." The examination was thorough, but quick. Dr. Chen checked my vitals, did an ultrasound, and finally sat back with a look of awe. "The baby is fine, better than fine. He's..." She shook her head. "I've never seen development like this. He's almost full term already, even though you've only been pregnant for 4 months. And his power signature?" She looked at Damien. "Alpha. This child is going to be extraordinarily strong. The combination of Thornheart and Silvermane bloodlines, plus the Luna's awakening during pregnancy, it's created something unprecedented." "Is she in danger?" Damien's hand tightened on mine. "The accelerated development is natural for this kind of pregnancy." Dr. Chen smiled at me. "Luna, your body is more than capable of carrying this child. In fact, I'd estimate you have about 2 weeks before delivery. Maybe 3. 2 weeks. My baby, our baby, would be here in 2 weeks. I looked at Damien, saw the same mixture of excitement and terror in his eyes, and laughed. "We're going to be parents." "We are." He kissed my knuckles, then my stomach where our son was growing strong. "Our heir. The future of both our bloodlines." The next 2 weeks passed in a blur of preparation and celebration. The pack was ecstatic. Not just about the baby, but about my awakening. Word spread through the wolf community, and lost ones began arriving at our borders, Silvermane wolves who'd been scattered and hidden, coming home to their Luna. There were 12 of them total, the survivors of my birth pack. Some I recognized from dreams, faces that had haunted my unconscious for years. Others were strangers, but the moment we touched, I felt the connection. Pack bonds reforming, bloodlines acknowledging each other. They told me stories of my parents, of my mother, Alara, whose silver fur had glowed like starlight, who'd been known for her healing gifts and her fierce protection of pack members. Of my father, Marcus, whose strength had been legendary, who died buying time for me to escape. "They loved you so much," an older wolf named Catherine told me, tears in her eyes. "That last night, your mother gave you to me. Told me to run, to get you somewhere safe. I ran until I couldn't run anymore. Then I had to choose, stay with you and risk leading the enemy to you, or leave you where humans would find you, where you'd be hidden among their scent." "You saved my life," I said, taking her hands. "You gave me a chance to survive, to grow up safe. That was the greatest gift you could have given." She pulled me into a hug, and I felt the pack bonds strengthening. Felt my Luna power spreading to encompass not just the Thornheart wolves, but the Silvermane survivors, too. Two packs, becoming one through blood and love and shared purpose. Damien watched it all with quiet pride, his hand always finding mine, his presence a constant reassurance. At night, we'd curl up together, my back to his front, his hand on my swollen belly, feeling our son kick and move. "What should we name him?" I asked one night, about a week before Dr. Chen's predicted delivery date. "I was thinking Marcus," Damien said quietly. "For your father, for my beta, for the legacy of strength and honor they both represent." Tears pricked my eyes. "Marcus Thornheart. I love it." "Marcus Thornheart Silvermane," Damien corrected. "Both bloodlines. Both legacies. The bridge between two great packs." I turned in his arms to kiss him, pouring everything I felt into the touch. Love and gratitude, and wonder at how drastically my life had changed in just a few months. From a desperate human offering to be a surrogate, to a Luna with a pack and a mate and a destiny. "I was only beginning to understand. I love you," I whispered against his lips. "I don't think I've said that enough. I love you, Damien Thornheart. My mate, my alpha, my forever." His eyes glowed bright in the darkness. "And I love you, Vera Silvermane. My Luna, my heart, my everything." His hands spread across my belly. "Both of you, my entire world." The contractions started at dawn, 3 days earlier than Dr. Chen had predicted. I woke to a sensation like lightning running through my body, a pressure that was both painful and purposeful. Damien was instantly alert beside me, his nostrils flaring as he scented the change in my body chemistry. "The baby," I managed. "He's coming." Damien moved with controlled efficiency, calling for Dr. Chen, alerting the pack, getting me to the medical wing. But I could feel his fear through our bond, could sense his memories of shifter births gone wrong, of losing pack members to difficult deliveries. "I'm strong. I sent to him through our bond. I'm Luna. I can do this." "I know you can," he sent back. "I'm still terrified of losing you." The labor was intense, but shorter than typical human births. My shifter healing and strength helped my body handle the stress, and having the entire pack's energy supporting me, their love and protection flowing through the pack bonds, gave me strength I didn't know I had. But there was a moment, right at the end, when my human body struggled with the baby's size and strength. The pain was overwhelming, and I felt my vision start to gray at the edges. That's when my wolf surged forward, not to shift, but to lend her strength to my human form. My eyes flashed silver, my muscles filled with supernatural power, and with one final push, our son entered the world. His cry wasn't entirely human. There was an edge of a wolf pup's yip in it, a sound that made every shifter in the medical wing smile with recognition. Dr. Chen cleaned him quickly and placed him in my arms, and I looked down at the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. He was perfect. Tiny and wrinkled and absolutely perfect, with a shock of dark hair and eyes that were already starting to show flecks of gold. When Damien leaned over us, our son's eyes tracked to him immediately, and he made a small sound of recognition. "Marcus," I whispered. "Marcus Thornhart Silvermane. Welcome to the pack, little one." Damien's hand covered mine, where it rested on our son's chest, and I felt wetness on my shoulder. Tears falling from my unshakable Alpha's eyes. "Thank you," he said hoarsely. "Thank you for him. For this. For choosing us." "I didn't choose you," I corrected gently, looking up at him with love that felt too big for my chest. "The moon chose us. Fate chose us. We were always meant to find each other. I just had to go through the strangest job interview in history to make it happen." He laughed through his tears and kissed me, careful not to jostle the baby, and I felt our family bond solidify. Father, mother, son, linked through love and blood and destiny. Dr. Chen finished her examinations, pronouncing both of us healthy and strong. "He's a powerful little alpha," she said with satisfaction. "And he's going to grow up surrounded by two packs who love him, protected by parents who would die for him. He's a lucky pup." "We're the lucky ones," Damien murmured, his finger tracing our son's tiny hand until the baby gripped it with surprising strength. "Both packs united under one heir. Peace between bloodlines that were fractured. And a Luna who brings together everything we've lost." Over the next few hours, the pack came to pay their respects, first the Thornhart wolves, then the Silvermane survivors, all of them touching the baby gently, offering their protection and loyalty. Marcus seemed to sense the importance of the moment, staying calm and alert, his eyes tracking each new face with an intelligence that seemed too advanced for a newborn. When Catherine, the wolf who'd saved my life, held him, she wept openly. "Your mother would be so proud," she told me. "So proud of the Luna you've become, the family you've created, the pack you've unified." "I wish they could have met him," I admitted, my own tears falling. "My parents. I wish they could know their grandson. They know." Damien pulled me close, careful of the baby between us. "Wherever they are, they know. And they're proud. Just like I'm proud. Just like our entire pack is proud of their Luna." That evening, as the sun set over Thornhart territory, we performed the traditional presentation ceremony. Damien carried our son out to the front of the estate where both packs had gathered, and I stood beside him, wearing a cloak of silver fur, Silvermane colors over my shoulders. "This is Marcus Thornhart Silvermane," Damien's voice rang out, amplified by alpha power so every wolf could hear. "My heir. My son. The future of both Thornhart and Silvermane bloodlines. He is the bridge between packs, the promise of peace, the answer to a prophecy spoken before he was born." He lifted Marcus higher, and our son, impossible child that he was, shifted for just a moment. A tiny wolf pup with fur that mixed Damien's shadow smoke coloring with my silver white, his eyes glowing with power that made the assembled wolves gasp in awe. Then he shifted back, letting out a cry that was all baby, and both packs howled their acceptance. The sound rose to the sky, a promise and a celebration, and I felt it resonate through every bond I carried. Mate bond, pack bond, bloodline bond. I'd walked into a cafe 6 months ago, desperate and human, offering my body to save my family. I'd thought it would be a transaction. Clinical, temporary, forgettable. Instead, I'd found my heritage, my mate, my pack, my purpose. I'd found myself. Damien turned to me, our son cradled between us, and his eyes glowed with love so fierce it took my breath away. "I hired a surrogate," he said quietly, "just for me. I needed an heir, a child to secure my pack's future." "And instead?" I prompted, smiling through happy tears. "Instead, I found my fated mate, my Luna, the missing piece of my soul." He kissed me gently, reverently. "The contract was for a baby, but our bond is for a throne, for a lifetime, for forever." "Forever," I agreed, feeling the truth of it in every cell of my body. "I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, where I've always been meant to be." Marcus made a small sound between us, his tiny hand reaching up as if trying to touch both our faces, and we laughed. Pure joy, pure love, pure rightness. The moon hung full and silver above us, casting light over the assembled packs, and somewhere in that light, I swore I could feel my parents smiling, proud of their daughter, proud of their grandson, proud of the legacy that would continue, stronger and more unified than ever before. I'd thought I was selling my body to save my family. Instead, I'd been answering a call I didn't even know I'd heard. The call of the wild. The call of my mate. The call of the moon herself. Bringing me home. Epilogue 1 year later, Marcus took his first steps at exactly 11 months old, shifting from pup to toddler mid-stride, and laughing with delight at his own cleverness. He was already showing signs of being incredibly powerful, able to shift at will, understanding pack bonds intuitively, and possessing a strength that made even seasoned warriors do double takes. But more than his power, it was his heart that made me proud. The way he'd toddle over to pack members who were sad and pat their legs in comfort, the way he'd share his toys with the other pups, even when he didn't want to. The way he'd fall asleep every night curled between me and Damien, his breathing synchronizing with ours, pack bonds humming with contentment the territory had grown. More lost ones had found their way to us, not just Silvermanes, but wolves from other scattered packs, drawn by the promise of unity and acceptance. We'd become a sanctuary for those who'd been lost, a home for those who'd been searching. And I'd grown into my role as Luna in ways I never imagined possible. I mediated disputes, organized pack events, trained young wolves in using their gifts, and stood beside Damien as we made decisions that affected hundreds of lives. It was exhausting and challenging and absolutely perfect. Tonight, we stood on the balcony outside our bedroom, Marcus asleep inside, watching the pack celebrate the Autumn Moon Festival. Music and laughter drifted up to us, the sound of our people happy and safe. "Do you ever regret it?" Damien asked quietly, his arms wrapped around me from behind, his chin resting on my shoulder. "The life you could have had? Human? Simple? Ordinary?" I thought about that girl in the cafe. Desperate. Scared, offering to carry a stranger's child out of pure necessity. She'd had no idea what she was walking into. No idea that signing that contract would change everything. "Not for a single second," I said honestly, turning in his arms to face him. "That life was never mine. It was borrowed, a placeholder until I found my real one." I touched his face, feeling the mate bond pulse between us like a second heartbeat. "This is where I belong. With you. With Marcus. With our pack. This is my life." He kissed me then, deep and loving and filled with all the promise of forever. When we broke apart, his eyes were glowing that familiar gold, and I felt my own eyes flash silver in response. "I love you, Vera Silvermane," he murmured. "My Luna, my mate, my everything." "And I love you, Damien Thornhart," I whispered back. "My alpha, my partner, my forever." From inside, Marcus made a small sound in his sleep. Content. Safe. Loved. And I knew with absolute certainty that everything had happened exactly as it was meant to. I'd needed to save my family. He'd needed an heir to break a curse. Our contract had been for a baby. But our bond was for a throne. And that bond, forged in desperation, tempered in truth, and sealed in love, would last for all the lifetimes the moon would give us. Forever and always. The end.